This is The Source on KSTX, Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It was about two summers ago that we saw this tremendous surge of unaccompanied minors and young mothers with children crossing the Rio Grande in massive numbers. They were fleeing out-of-control gang violence in Central America and surrendering to the first border agents that they could find. This continues to happen even today, and the numbers of the children and women who showed up at the border overwhelmed the immigration system. But now we're only learning about how the Obama administration dealt with this problem, with a $1 billion no-bid contract to the largest private prison company in America. Well, what is behind that contract, and what is its legacy? Chico Harland wrote about it for The Washington Post. His article is Inside the Administration's $1 Billion Deal to Detain Central American Asylum Seekers. We're also joined by Jonathan Ryan, the director of RAISES, Refugee and Immigration Center for Education and Legal Services, a nonprofit that provides legal services for those seeking asylum. And our phone lines are open. We invite you into our conversation as we talk about this topic. What do you think about this $1 billion deal? Do you think that the Obama administration does need some help with their negotiating tactics? Call in 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet us at @tprsource. So Chico Harland, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell me about this contract.
Well, it's enormous.
We hear about big contracts all the time from the federal government. What is unusual about this one?
Well, let's just put the size in perspective first. As an exercise, it helps to think about these places as hotels, because the people that run these private prison companies and immigration detention companies, they are obsessed about capacity. How many people are in the beds? Because for them, that means money. Each warm body is another extra, $65 a night, $85 a night. That rate depends on the contract with the federal government, but it is almost always tied to the capacity. Well, in this case, with the facility in Dilley, that wasn't the arrangement. The arrangement was the federal government provides block payments on a monthly basis, sending basically $20 million every month to CCA, no matter how many people are staying there. So all of a sudden, in the government's eyes, depending on the number of people sent there, it's either a pretty bad deal or a catastrophically bad deal. And let's just imagine that it's half full, and then you do the math on how many people or how much money is being spent per person per night, you get about $580. And that's just on the average night. So it would be cheaper to put these people in the Ritz-Carlton. It really would be. So the guarantee is different, and then the way in which the deal was orchestrated without any proper formal bidding process, that was also quite unusual.
You write about that there was a sense of urgency, that they really needed to get something going immediately as we had this crisis on the border with children arriving and mothers. And so they put out the word, we need a facility. So is that what they use as their logic for, we don't have time for bids, we need to break ground?
No doubt. That was the underpinning for most of the decisions that were made. And look, it is understandable. This is a gray issue. The thinking was the Central Americans are coming across the border at a really unprecedented clip because word has gotten back that they get to the border and they are given great leniency, in some cases literally just transported to the closest bus station and told, see you in court in a couple of months or longer. So the Obama administration thought, we really have to stop that cycle. We have to clip this understanding that you're going to be treated with leniency. And so for them, every hour, every day mattered profoundly. And the goal, I think, above all, was to build something very quickly. As a result, some shortcuts were taken, and certainly there was not much of an aggressive stance taken in the negotiations with this company.
So we saw many of the children end up before this facility was built at Lackland Air Force Base here in San Antonio. Of course, this was had a lot of negative optics as well on played out on TV. The network TV were doing live shots hourly from the border, showing more children showing up. So this was a public relations nightmare for the Obama administration.
No doubt. I don't think you can understate the optics of it. That counts in politics, and it looked bad. You had unaccompanied children staying, you know, in the facilities that you mentioned. There was some House immigration hearing saying, you know, this was literally the title of the hearing was an administration made disaster at the border. Obama was getting hammered for this, and I think a lot of that was legitimate, but there's always sort of this. The pendulum swings back, and really, for most Americans, the attention paid to that pendulum swinging in the other direction was much less than to the initial crisis. And so that was the appeal to me as a journalist to think about, okay, well, we remember that crisis in 2014. We think it's all over now. It's not really, but certainly there's less attention paid to what's going on in terms of Central Americans, mothers and kids at the border. But what actually happened in the last 2 years? What has changed? And it turns out there was basically a whole new industry born.
Jonathan Ryan, director of RAISES, you were there in Lackland when those children were first arriving.
That's correct.
Talk about that.
My organization, RAISES, is principally a legal services organization. We worked in Lackland Air Force Base in the summer of 2014, representing, defending the children who were in government custody. And based on our interviews and our 30 years of experience defending these kinds of cases with great success, we found that two-thirds of the kids who were at that Lackland Air Force Base, 63%, had very strong asylum claims. And so I think that the criticism that Chico refers to about the administration-created crisis is a valid one, actually, because in my capacity, in my job, I am in touch with refugee offices, with the U.S. government offices that house specifically the children. And they knew, actually, going back to the fall of 2013, that they were expecting 60,000 to 70,000 unaccompanied children to arrive the following year. So they actually knew that the numbers were coming, and that's based on the violence that's raging in Central America. But the reason that they were caught surprised was because in the months leading up to the surge, you had Health and Human Services, the agency that's appointed to care for these kids, in disaster. The Obamacare website didn't work. The government was shut down for a month by Ted Cruz. Even the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Sebelius, left her post in May of 2014, just as the numbers were really arriving. And so what you found was a president who was trying to pass an executive action on immigration, seeing this crisis, this humanitarian crisis, threatening his policy. And so he created this false narrative that these women and kids were threats in order to prop up this huge enforcement machine, which, again, we have to remember was putting women and children, asylum seekers, in prisons for profit.
All right, we're going to continue our conversation as we talk about the Dilley Detention Center. Did this facility ever actually have to be built? Was this the right decision at the right time? We're talking to the Washington Post about the expose on the story. We invite your calls, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Down in Dilley, they have a heck of a detention center. It cost the federal government $1 billion. It's a four-year contract. This is for the women and children are showing up on the Texas border from Central America, fleeing the out-of-control violence in their homeland. We're joined by Jonathan Ryan, the director of RAISES, and also Chico Harlan. He wrote about it for the Washington Post. His article is Inside the Administration's $1 Billion Deal to Detain Central American Asylum Seekers. So, Chico, I'm just wondering if this was really the right call at the right time. You say, just the money deal aside, building this detention center, it seemed like this was a move really not about detention or not even, it's not even supposed to be housing these folks, but to send a message to Central America that this was not going to get a warm reception when they came to the United States.
I don't know. I can't speak authoritatively on whether this was a sound move, but what I can say is surprising is that generally the whole purpose of pushing a task onto into the private sector is to reduce the risk for the government. Look, the risk would have been the government saying, or one version of the risk would have been the government saying, okay, to accommodate this new policy of detention, we are going to hire new federal employees, we're going to build a new federal detention center, and this will be the housing, this will be the first step in housing and processing Central American asylum seekers, women and children. Instead, they decided to pass that task on to a private company, which makes great sense if you also are passing on the risk. But in this case, because of the way the contract was structured, the government still was taking all the risk, and the private company just got what amounts to guaranteed profit and revenue. So, look, I mean, that part of it might sound just like a technical detail, a difference in the contract, one way that this stands out from other deals, but it actually made this deal a lot different in terms of who was shouldering the risk. And in that way, I would say for the government, it was probably not the soundest move.
You're right about the guarantee. It doesn't matter if there's zero people in the center or if it's completely 100% full, they're still going to get the same amount of money. But I wonder, because I've heard criticism about other detention centers where they do get paid per head in the bed, and the people have said that they have slow-walked the release of people out of these detention centers in order to increase their profit margin. So it seems... either way, there's some sort of angle of criticism, Chico.
Yeah, that's true, but I guess it just goes to show you that when you're dealing with companies that are trying to profit based on detaining people, there's going to be some element of it on no matter what that is unsavory, that is open to criticism. And I can't think of a single way we lay out basically the two ways in which the contract can be structured, and there are flaws with both. So what conclusion are you left to draw?
So, Jonathan Ryan, you've been in this facility in Dilley. Talk about it.
I have been many times, both to the Dilley Detention Center, which can hold up to 2,400 people. It's currently the largest immigration detention center that our nation has. And also the Carnes Detention Center, which was previously a prison that was just repurposed for the placement of women and children.
But that's a different company, right? That's GEO?
That's being run by the GEO company. That's correct.
And the one in Dilley is the CCA.
CCA, yes, exactly.
Okay.
Two different corporations. And I think, in terms of your question about whether this was a correct strategy, it was the reason for the propping up that was stated of these facilities was deterrence. The government, President Obama, Secretary Jay Johnson of the Department of Homeland Security stated that they needed to send a message to other refugees not to come. And that's why they set up these detention centers. And the review is that it was completely a complete failure. The women and children continue to come to our border looking for our assistance. And the reason is because people were not coming here enticed to America. They weren't coming here because of the warm reception that they were supposedly receiving. The reason that they came here is because they've been displaced in the most violent cities on earth outside of Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq. These Central American countries are the murder capitals of the world. And these people are fleeing the worst violence in our hemisphere. And once they are displaced, of course, they're going to come to the United States, which is the safe place. And also, oh, by the way, the beacon of democracy and freedom for the last 75 years. We used to be in the business of building statues that were beacons of light to refugees across the ocean. Now we've replaced Ellis Island with these detention centers. And I think as Americans, we really need to look at not just the corruption of our dollars, but really the corruption of our democracy and our place in the world. Do we really want to be that nation? Do we really want to leave behind the legacy that we've been so proud of over the last 75 years, at least since World War II?
What happens in the detention center? What is the purpose of it, Jonathan?
The detention centers, you made reference to the Ritz, and it would be cheaper for them to put people in the Ritz Hotel, and they also might receive something close to positive treatment. Let's remember that these are cell blocks that have beds bolted into the wall. They receive the most minimal to non-existent medical services. Water is the prescription for most ailments. We've seen bottled water prescribed for broken bones. We have seen mental health deterioration on an extreme scale by not just the women, but children who are spending sometimes over half of their lives in a prison environment. We've seen attempts at suicide.
Right, but what is the purpose? Why are they there? I mean, it's not to detain them. It's not to be punitive. I mean, that's written into the law. They're supposed to, so there's something supposed to be happening at this facility?
So what's going on in the facilities is, although they present these as necessary services for people who are arriving, they're in fact attempting to deport as many of these women and children as possible in these facilities through a process called expedited removal. So you've got women who have suffered abuse, who have navigated through the most dangerous territories in Mexico to get here, and now they have to undergo a scrutinizing interview within a few hours of arriving, explaining essentially their asylum claim to an officer who's loaded with trick questions, really there to cull the herd. They are there to try to return as many people as possible to prevent them from accessing our asylum courts.
They have an immigration court there?
They have an immigration court there, but the entire policy has been contorted and adjusted for bureaucratic efficiency. They've only got time to see so many cases, so they essentially deport huge swaths of these women before they can get to court just to save time on court. And that's really not how you're supposed to treat justice. Justice is not an administration of efficiency. It's of right versus wrong. And we're seeing most of these women who actually get representation pass their interviews, which shows that those who are not passing are failing because they don't have representation, not because they're not refugees.
Chico Harlan, you got down to Dilley, you got eyes on the facility?
I did, yeah. I got inside and wrote a companion piece about that trip. But look, I mean, it feels remote to the credit of the legal world. A lot of lawyers have upended their lives to come down there and do represent these women pretty thoroughly. And that part is touching to see. The women's stories are unbelievably compelling. And at the same time, I think that they don't quite have, you know, there's the reference was just made to Ellis Island, to the American history of welcoming people fleeing violence, all true. And I think for these women, the past weeks in many cases or past years have been so harrowing that by the time they get there, they're not really in the mindset to describe, at least the ones I found, none of them said, this is, you know, fire on earth that I'm living in right now. Rather, it was, I think, stated by the majority of women I talk to, you know, this is a place where for the first time in as long as I can remember, I don't feel imperiled. I don't like it here, but it's also not hell. So I think you sort of need to put their comments into the right context. This is a facility that is not providing the most thorough treatment. It's a for-profit center. At the same time, you know, these women, as was sort of referenced earlier, they're being pushed out of their own countries by such profound forces that by the time they get to a place even like Dilley, Texas, and even to this detention center, it is kind of for them the first time they've had to exhale, granted in fairly grim surroundings. But that's what I found.
And so Chico, you're one of the few reporters that I know who have been able to get an insight on this facility. I don't know any other reporters who have gotten in.
People were surprised. There were sort of those, like a horse and pony go around with some press when it first opened, and I don't even believe that it was yet populated by people, but I could be wrong on that. It was easy for me to get in. I just had to provide the A numbers, essentially de facto prisoner numbers of a few people that were given to me by the legal team down there, the women that they recommended might be willing to share their stories. And I thought that these women would be, you know, under some time limit or supervised by ICE or CCA officials, and that did not happen. These women walked into a room one by one, and I got almost half a day to spend with them. But I didn't get access to the full facility. I didn't see the sleeping quarters. I didn't see the beds. I didn't see the meals. And from my little window in this basically bunker where I was interviewing these women, I could see a sort of sad-looking open courtyard area with no trees and gravel that was reflecting the sun.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. I've seen video of that courtyard. But I've heard that the children are asked to stand in line for quite a long time in the sun, Jonathan.
They have to stand in line for count. Even sometimes we've heard that if the kids could be standing in the shade, they're forced to stand in the sun. It is a punitive environment. There's no rational person who's visited these centers and thought anything different. You make reference to the dismal look of the place. There are pictures of the Dilley facility right next to photos of the concentration camps in World War II Germany, and they're almost identical. We had our own internment camps on the very sites here in the United States for Japanese people back in World War II era days, and these facilities are extremely, extremely similar. You asked David what the purpose of these centers is, and I was a bit shocked when you asked the question because there's only one answer. There's only one purpose for these facilities, and that is for lining the pockets of the companies that run them. The only winners in this entire endeavor have been those private companies. The refugees are still suffering. They're still fleeing from their country, and there's, other than these detention centers, our government is spending no money to actually assist and serve the women and children once they get out.
Let me ask you, Chico, it's a 4-year contract. We're 2 years in. What happens after it runs out?
Something's going to happen probably before it runs out. Right now, CCA was recently, as they disclosed to my surprise in a conference call, not a conference call, but a call with investors earlier this month, they disclosed that the government was trying to push for a better deal or renegotiate the terms of this contract. And that news alone drove their stock down by about 8 or 9% in a day. The government's also looking to build a separate or a different family detention center, probably elsewhere in Texas, for a much, much, much lower rate. So this is not the end of family detention by any means. But the fact that they're looking into some competing alternative gives them more leverage to push for a better deal with CCA.
Yeah, but we've seen local communities pushing back on those attempts to relocate
right.
these detention centers. It's showing that the communities are rallying in opposition.
This one that came to Dilley was, in the way that the contract was structured, basically it came without any signing off from the local community. And what you see now is what happens when the local community is solicited for its opinion or is asked to sign off.
Right.
They don't want it. And I think that's one of the reasons that the deal was structured as it was.
Okay, Chico, I got to cut you off.
Having any input.
Article is in the Washington Post. You can find it online inside the administration's $1 billion deal to detain Central American asylum seekers. This is The Source on KSTX.